further comment is on finance in the provincial legislators. It's practice that we invite these chairpersons and MECs.
Sound coming from me?
And they used to bring staff with of the committees to be present at the lock-up session as well as the briefing Friday of the minister. And then they join us again on the 10th of November when we get a briefing on the Division of Revenue and Management Law. So welcome to those colleagues. As far as myself is concerned, I would like to leave about 14 such important to join my colleagues in the SUP. So
balanced and careful
efforts at fiscal consolidation, we institute measures on the expenditure side that reduce expenditure by just over 20 billion over the next 3 years, and of course that these are additional to what we had proposed in February, and of course there are also tax measures. Combined, those tax measures, just to give honorable members a sense, for 2017-18, they add up to 28 billion in additional taxes. We also talked the issue of the financing, of additional financing or funding for higher education, very relevant at this point in time, given what we've been witnessing around the country. Honorable members of the board, last year, in the budget for the financial year we're currently in, government has to reprioritize spending or budgets from some funds to an amount of just over 16 billion to add to NS Trust to help reduce pay for some of the debt that students were owing to universities, and at the same time to make sure that through NS Trust those students who qualified but were not covered were therefore covered. Now government has had to top that up with a further 17 billion over the next 3 years. That's taking spending on higher education to a point where it is the second fastest growing item, second to debt service costs, but at the same time NS was to a whopping increase of about 18.5% in the next 2 years. Even in the face of this remark that I've made, spending on infrastructure investment so that we can ease the bottlenecks and raise the production capacity of the economy, or the potential growth of the economy, is still happening within that spending and the number. I'll take a little bit more time on this slide so that we can boost and I can even pause and hand over to you. Most growth forecasts have been revised country at this particular time. They too were still going about it, but not as robustly as fast as they do. So not at the bottom of them see our own political position revised up by 44% since January to now 0.53% for this year. Calendar year that is, and next year 1.2%. The next slide, slide 4, shows or talks to slowing growth for sub-Saharan Africa. Very important because as a result of the low commodity prices in several countries on the continent, certainly those that are commodity dependent, are suffering and having different kind of difficulties than those that are working in slowing their growth in sub-Saharan Africa. Now, the importance of this for South Africa is the fact that when Europe had slowed considerably and its demand for our manufactured goods had fallen, Africa took a lot of that slack because many parts of the continent were actually doing well. You can see the forecast there, especially those of Nigeria and South Africa, the two largest economies on the continent. Earlier on, if you now turn to slide 5, you will see, going back, just the historical trend in the average growth rate of our own economy, that before the crisis, it was really roaring. Growth rates averaging 4.3% for the sort of 7-8 years through 2008, and of course we had the dip in 2009 when the global financial crisis broke, and a fairly robust rebound soon thereafter. But since then, growth has tended to decelerate year after year going forward to the 0.5 of this year. We are seeing some green shoots, as the minister was indicating, and we do believe that in the period ahead we are or could achieve growth rates of about 2%. Nothing is automatic, of course. This would require that confidence improves, as we touch on it on slide 6, to levels definitely higher than where we find it now. And of course, the things that contribute to that situation will first have to happen. And you can see, if you look at the panel on the or the block on the right-hand top right-hand corner of that slide, that there is a correlation, very close correlation, between the maroon line, which signals business confidence, and the grayish line, which signals GDP growth measured on the right hand side or right axis. And you can see that whenever business confidence improves, then growth tends to follow that. There are a number of things that we list which we think would contribute towards supporting the recovery. If the real exchange rate depreciation that we have seen does not get eroded by inflation, which is at this stage there is no evidence of that, then we can see it impacting positively on our exports. And of course, there does appear to be a rebound in commodity prices, and of course we do expect that the drought and the electricity situation will be different in the period ahead. On the next slide, we set out the two fiscal challenges, as we call them, that in the medium term we have got to try and make sure that we avoid what we characterize there as the low growth trap. Because if we were to get into it,
then we could find it very hard to get out of it. So in a way, the setting of fiscal policy, what we have done, both in terms of the reductions in expenditure, the proposed increases in taxes, has been informed by the desire to make sure that we are strike that delicate balance of ensuring that we act in a way that still demonstrates clearly a firm commitment to returning our fiscus to a strong footing, but at the same time be careful that we don't act too hastily, too strongly to damage what I could call the nascent growth, so to speak. Of course, in the longer term, for us to be able to realize our aspirations as they are set out in the Constitution, elaborated in greater detail in the NDP and all the other plans of government, we must make sure that we do what it takes to grow the economy, because if we don't do that, we wouldn't be able to afford the expansion of public services financed on a sustainable basis over the long term. On the next slide, we talk then to a package of actions aimed at restoring confidence. Now, we indicate that there is a need to give certainty on regulatory frameworks relating to the different sectors of the economy, but also including in relation to the governance of SOEs, where appropriate arrangements for collaboration with the private sector and a whole range of stuff. And there is a lot of progress that has been made to put this in place. Some of them are being implemented already, others they are in the final stages of approval within the government the government processes, including what is listed at the bottom there, the labor market, some of the labor market reforms that have been under discussion within the context of NEDLAC. Some of the work between government, labor, and business is bearing fruits. We worked with labor in the run-up to June, May, June, went, spoke with investors, rating agencies, and we saw that paying off. We also continued that work post post June, and business made firm commitments, set up an SMME fund, which will not only just give funding to deserving small businesses, but there will also be the funding will be coupled with mentorship and support that necessary, absolutely necessary hand-holding of those businesses so that they've got a higher probability to succeed. At the same time, business has committed to devote financial resources plus more to hiring young people, about 1.5 million. Of course, the processes to get that going are quite advanced. The targets are between 1 million and 1.5 over a period of 3 to 5 years. So those things will begin to show that we are indeed working together, all constituencies, for the greater good of the country. And of course, the last bullet does relate to where that what that comes from. I made the point about the real growth in spending. Slide 9 shows that over time. So I think I don't need to waste your time to explain what is there. If you go to slide 10, we then show how, with the measures that we have taken, debt, both gross, that is before you take account of cash balances, and net loan debt, which is after adjusting for the cash balances that government has, that is the gray line there. The dotted part shows the projections going forward, and you can see the slope of those both curves sort of peaking and sort of leveling off in the period ahead. All of that, it's very important to indicate, it's not going to be automatic. There are a couple of moving things there. It's predicated on the growth forecast we have set out realizing, but at the same time, the revenues then that are supposed to be derived from that, and the policy measures being those targets being achieved. On slide 11, we then get to the meat of the measures. First, perhaps just quickly glance at the graph on the right-hand corner that looks like silver. It shows the pre-crisis period where revenue ran consistently above non-interest expenditure, which means that we were running a substantially positive primary balance. Of course, the crisis occurred, and then we had to spend too much, borrow too much, and you can see then the two lines crossing. The idea then is to get them to cross again, and that's where you see now that around 2017-18 we expect the two lines to cross. It is as a result of the efforts that then government has made, which are proposed under those bullets there, under government proposals. First, reductions in to the expenditure ceiling, again, in other words, further reductions to the ones that were proposed previously of 10 billion in 2017, and you can see a further amount for 2018-2019. And of course, additional tax measures, perhaps to just remind honorable members, as you see on the table on the bottom right hand corner there, we had proposed in the 2016 budget that there would be revenue measures starting in 2016, 18 billion and 15 billion in each one of the outer 2 years. So on top of the 15 billion of 2017-18, an amount of 13 billion is proposed, thus taking the tax measures in that year to 28 billion in total. When you combine them and the expenditure measures, then you see at the bottom that in 2017-18, the measures will add up to 48 billion. That's around 1% of GDP, and roughly the same proportion in 2018-19. So that then gives the consolidation that we anticipate. Marginal deviation this year to 3.4, I think from about 3.2 January, February, pardon me, and of course we anticipate that by the outer year we will reach 2.5%. I'll spend a little longer there so that we can go to the next slide a bit quicker, which is slide 12. What we didn't then talk about, because it's not reflected on the previous slide, perhaps just to make the point, if you go to 2017-18, you look at the revenue line, we are projecting that after all those measures are done and everything, we will have a revenue of about 1.4 trillion, that revenue will translate to 30% of GDP. Expenditure will be 1.564 trillion or amount to 33% of GDP. Of course, the difference between the revenue line and the expenditure line is the budget balance, the 3.1% next year. Of course, then you can see what loan debt will rise to, and of course, as a percentage of GDP. When you look at the two blocks below that, in the one we show just how national and provincial headcount has changed over time, in the earlier years, which you can call good years, fat years, employment in the civil service could rise in some instances in leaps, so to speak. It seems now to have reached a peak for now at about 1.2 million people. And what happens then beyond 2015-16 is going to be a function of two things. In the main, wage bill growth. If salary increases per person are high, then the system will probably afford fewer people. On the contrary, if the salary increases are moderate, then there would conceivably be space to either keep the numbers at what we see, and in some instances they could even increase depending on what the next wage settlement looks like. Now, on the right hand side, it's very interesting to see how strong public expenditure grew in the past years, non-interest expenditure that is, rate of about 10% in some years in real terms, and of course as the economy slowed, it became harder to sustain those levels of expenditure because if we were to try to, we wouldn't be talking numbers like what you see at the bottom of that table of just about two trillion at net loan debt. They would be much higher. Of course, in the period ahead, spending isn't going to grow that much faster than even. Where does the money then go? What does it get spent on? Is what is reflected on this next slide, slide 13. You will see we list basic education, health, defense, and so on. The most important column, perhaps, in this case, yes, the absolute numbers are good because you've got 4 years there, 2016 and then projections for the future, but the most interesting part to look at perhaps are the growth rates. You can see that post-school education does indeed grow quite fast, close to 10% average annual over this period. Health too, doing reasonably well. And social protection. Of course, one of the things that will be assisted by the stabilization of debt is that bottom line there of 10.1, which is the debt, the rise in debt service cost. The idea is that that shouldn't be the fastest growing item. On the next slide, it's just a different way to reflect the same thing, which I'll flip. You can look at it. It is self-explanatory. Often the question arises, do the measures that we instituted, when I say we, I mean government, to contain costs or spending on non-essential or essential items, are these measures working? The next slide, slide 15, answers that question. I hope it does so convincingly. It shows that a number of items, spending on them has reduced. In some instances, it's just the hard stuff where budgets have been curtailed or cut. But in other instances, there are bits of efficiency in there where you're still buying the same quantities or even more, but now because we instituted one or some other measure, we're paying less for them. I've given the example of textbooks several times. We have extended that to telephone. We have extended that to travel and accommodation because we have negotiated discounts through the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. Or we have asked tough questions to the providers of services because we sneaked around and checked what other people were paying for the same thing, and we asked why we should pay more as government than other people, even though in terms of volumes we are buying more. It's not a very nice conversation, but it is one that has to be had. On the next slide, 16, we show, I've spent a lot of time on this in the first slide. Perhaps the only thing I will point the Honourable House to is just the growth rates that are shown on the graph with the index on the right-hand side. You can see that school education and training stands out like a very, very sore thumb. It's not made up numbers. And then below that, we show then the breakdown of it, which is set out quite clear. On slide 17, we give the breakdown of the amount that I talked about earlier on, the 16 billion in the 2016 MTF and the 17.6 billion in the 2017 MTF that's proposed. You'll see, honourable members, that what's covered there is relief of historical debt because it does prevent students from registering when they owe the institution. So that was covered. I referred to the extension of NSFAS to those students who were qualifying but were previously not covered. 2 billion last year, the amount rises to 3 billion by 2018-19. And of course, similar additional amounts for 2017 are set out. Of course, there is a portion last year that related to the zero fee increase. So it was zero for insofar as the pocket of those who had the responsibility to pay previously. But the universities did get their increase, but it came from a different source. And of course, we show how much goes to people. Quite important. Very important slide, the next one, 18. It just sets out the division of revenue. As honorable members would know, the Constitution, Chapter 13, requires that each sphere should receive an equitable share of nationally raised revenue. You will see if you just pick 2017-18, which is the year for which there shall be an appropriation in February, national allocations will be 589 billion, provinces 538, local governments 112 billion. It's always important to make the point about the national allocation, the local government allocation, a sizable proportion, maybe sizable is even a number taken, a very big proportion for some municipalities of the resources that flow through their accounts relates to the sources of funding other than nationally raised revenue, whether it's property rates that they charge or user charges for the services that they buy and on-sale to the people who live within their jurisdiction. Of course, these shares then translate to national government getting 47.5%, provinces 43.4%, and municipalities 9.1%. The shares hardly change proportionally speaking over the next 3 years. On slide 19, we set out some of the actions that have been taken to try and improve the situation in relation to state-owned companies. The reason this slide is important is because we highlight this as one of the risks, and we have been for some time, but its significance for budgeting is the fact that we have guaranteed the debt of some of the state donators, so we've got to act carefully and determinedly at all times to make sure that what's now contingent liabilities does not become actual liabilities tomorrow. Of course, that's a situation that we've got to watch carefully over time. The conclusions are summarized, on page of slide 20, that South Africa will emerge out of the situation that it is in, if of course we act decisively, and the actions are listed in the book. The minister emphasized several of them in his speech yesterday. We must get on with implementing the reforms that are undergathered by the National Development Plan, our 9-point plan, as was published and communicated by the President in the State of the Nation address in the relevant year. And of course, we must deal with the other things that stand in the way of us succeeding. I think that this comes to the end of it. I know that people were still enjoying it. I was too. Sadly, it comes to the end.
Many thanks, sir. Thank you. My apologies for being 2 minutes late. The TV has done an excellent job. I just want to reinforce something that are in the conclusion and help you. The first is clearly the green shoots are there, but green shoots need to be nurtured, and they need to be nurtured both politically, economically, and socially. And as we said in the speech, it's up to us as to how, as a nation, we approach this question. Second, we must be, and I hope Parliament will join us in this venture, the singular focus needs to be on inclusive growth. How do you create conditions for growth in this economy? Whether it's confidence building, whether it's increases in investment by the state, which is happening, whether it's encouraging private sector investment or foreign investment, in portfolio, but in the real economy in particular. You don't get the growth number right, we don't get the growth generated in the right kind of way, all these other fiscal numbers will keep shifting in the wrong direction. So, Parliament, I don't think, engages adequately with the issues of growth, if I may say so with respect. You might have political party views on it, but Chair, I think there's a lot of room, and Chairs, there's a lot of room for us to really get into some deep thinking about what are the structural blockages in our economy, where are the reforms required, who's going to undertake those reforms, when can we expect the results? Because this is not just a talk shop, it affects the future and the well-being of 55 million people. The third, which reinforces that, is fiscal and budgetary manipulation and management is not going to give us all the answers. We can keep consolidating, watching growth, as the DG pointed out, and we're walking a very delicate and measured path at the moment to ensure that those, that table on that particular slide that we can refer you to, where we talk about expenditure cuts and tax increases, doesn't actually count on growth at the end of the day. So that's the disaster that we've got to avert. And the opposite is actually what we need to do. So whilst we focus on the fiscal side, and that includes revenue, we lose $23 billion in revenue this year, and much more as we go forward if the scenario remains the same. That is something that the country can't afford. And the performance of the revenue service in this regard comes to the fore, which is a matter we'll discuss at some other point in time. But the fiscal issues need to be complemented by what we call in the speech a multifaceted approach. Firstly, get the growth dynamic going. Secondly, build confidence and investment and partnerships. Government cannot do all of the things that need to be done on its own. Thirdly, ensure that our government programs, like the 9-point plan, are actually implemented. And there must be concrete evidence and milestones and delivery and action which shows both South Africans and others that we are a government that works. Fourthly, we need to undertake the reforms that we said we would undertake and the changes that we would undertake. Some of them lie in Parliament's hands, chairpersons and members. Electricity certainty, of course, is not in your hands. We don't want you to become engineers. The Deputy President is leading a whole process on the labour market side, and there's been good advances this year in terms of labour stability. More needs to be done, and there's work going on, and there's optimism about that, balloting, minimum wage, etc. Thirdly, support for small businesses. There's still agencies sitting in the wrong place. They haven't been consolidated yet. I think Parliament must actually ask for some answers about when will this consolidation will take place. There are some growth areas like tourism, the oceans economy and so on, that need to be cleared up. The question of SOCs has been mentioned. They are bills in the parliamentary process. The NPRBA, the Regulation Landholdings Bill and Communal Land Tenure Bill, and other similar ones, which are necessary to speed up because they remove uncertainty. We can't be the contributors to uncertainty that contributes to the picture that we are painting to you, whereas it is within our power to clear those things. So I would appeal for a sense of urgency on Parliament's side as well to make sure that we enhance some of these processes in the right kind of way. And then there are other areas on the spectrum front, in respect of other places as well, where quick decisions will actually help us to create a climate of certainty and give us the rewards that we require as an economy and as a people. But ultimately, as we said yesterday, I'm not sure what role and how you do it through your committees, but Parliament as well, is your contribution to building national consensus around a plan of action that will certainly reinforce the hope that we see, reiterate the fact that, or rather strengthen the fact that there are these green shoots that are available to us, and turn the economic picture around so that the fiscal picture at the end of the day looks better. So I'm optimistic that there are more possibilities for that happening and not happening, but a lot of hard work, a lot of hard talking, and a lot of consensus building needs to take place in order for us to get there. Thank you.
I gather that on that side the mics are working. Where you have them on, they're not. So you have to carry your voice. There's nothing we can do. What might help is, look, I don't know about IT, they're attending to it. Can you switch it off if you can? Maybe that helps. I don't know. Okay. Okay, good. Right. So can we have hands up? I need to know who, how many of you want to speak, and then we'll allocate time accordingly, right? So we're going to use the cell phone I have here, and we're not going to advantage anybody. So can we have hands up? One, Sandy, coming to this side. Number two, number three, number four, number five, number six, number seven, right? And we only do mechanical, but what about maximum eight? Maximum 3 minutes. 4 minutes. So let's have you know your numbering, over to you. Let's have 3 minutes for now, please. Thank you, Tali.
Thank you, Chef. First, let me congratulate the minister for the increase in the education budget. I know the difficulty will be that it has been offset from other a program, but the fact that we were able to do it, that's an achievement that needs to be recorded. But let me quickly hasten to say that I looked at the projections on the outer year in terms of growth, and the 2% goes to me. I'm worried whether it should not be ambitious to achieve. We should not be threatened by those who believe that the economy should grow at a faster pace and then risk having projected it at a very higher level and we don't achieve the 2% goal. So to me the 2% might be if you look, you realize 0.4%, you want to move to 1.3%, then you jump 2%. I'm saying this because if you look at the pattern of the presentation that the DG has made in relation to the expenditure ceiling, there still needs to be a culture change, DG, from government departments to spend. Maybe we'll look at that when we look at how, from February to date, how they cut spending. So the reductions on spending might not be realized in the 3 outer years as we presented, therefore it will affect growth. So we might want to reverse them down to maybe 1.5% growth in 2017-2018. If I'm not right, don't worry, I'm not an economist like a good job, so I'm doing it from my own humbleness to try and be realistic about what we can achieve in the current conjuncture. Secondly, the message is very strong, Minister, that you want to focus on value-added tax as opposed to company taxes. But my personal view, Chair, will be that we need to strike a balance between the VAT, the company tax, and the personal income taxes, so that there isn't pressure in one way or the other. I'll demonstrate the point I'm trying to make, Honourable Chair. I know when you want to increase the VAT, you will want to focus more on luxury items and things like that. But what you will be able to attain from luxury items might not equate to what the total VAT can achieve if the collections are made. So you still have an element of transfer of that to the poorest of the poor. And I'm not suggesting by any means that...
I think you're very close to 3 minutes.
No. can I come later?
Yeah, you can come back.
That's fine.
Taken about any
I've got a number of...
Text.
Yeah.
Come in the budget, right?
Yeah.
So I think Sandy's speculating, but there's no...
Why do you respond to me, Chair? It's not your purview.
Let it be misunderstood. That's how I understand it. Am I right? There's no decisions being taken. Presumably that's something you do. Because in the media as well, people are asking where this money is going to come from. As I know the norm, it means that the minister normally doesn't address tax issues in the MCPPF. You do so in the budget. Because markets can overstate the money. So that's what I mean. You're offering your view. Nothing wrong with that. Great. Welcome. Thank you very much for that. I'm just clarifying. That's the job of the chair, right? Nice. Who's number two?
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Minister. Just from our side, we'd like to commend you for the medium-term budget policy statement for sticking to the strict fiscal consolidation part. Minister, on page 23 of the document, you indicate the consolidation measures proposed in the NTBS are likely to have some dampening effect on economic activity. You'd unpack that for us. But over the medium term, you said further loss of confidence and a rating downgrade, which could prompt high interest rates and large capital outflows, remain greater risks to the economy than the likely effects of fiscal consolidation. Would you comment, obviously, on what your thoughts are relating to the rating downgrade, and if you believe, which I would hope to be the case, that what you have presented will prevent a rating downgrade at the end of this year? Then, secondly, that one of the largest risks to the fiscal consolidation part is, of course, the state-owned enterprise and the exposure of the state guarantee. And if in particular, Minister, if you comment on the risk posed by giving ESCOM the ability or the right to engage in the nuclear deal or the nuclear project, given the challenges that they've had with Mabuk and Kusula, and what risk that presents to the fiscal consolidation path should state guarantees have to be called upon going forward. Then lastly, Chair, I'm not sure to what degree this is Parliament, but possibly the Minister of National Treasury can comment on to what degree they are able to contest contracts that have been entered into. And in particular, I'm thinking of the contract for the sale of our strategic oil reserves, which was declared unlawful by the Auditor General. We obviously as Parliament have a role to play in that, but to what degree can National Treasury also contest at that contact or similar contacts? Thank you, Treasury.
You're 22 seconds. Number three and number four.
Thank you.
Speak to the mic, roving mic. Like the people on this side, you've got a roving mic.
Thank you, Chair. There's obviously a burning and unanticipated question. The Minister will be aware that a story broke today in the media about an incident at SARS, where it's alleged that a senior official at SARS was held hostage by the Hawks. I just wanted to ask the Minister whether he was aware of the incident, whether he had been informed about the incident, and whether he would share his thoughts on how that incident ought to be dealt with.
And I'm merely asking what a chair would do. What is the relevance? Because that opens the door to a lot of other things. I'm chairing the Minister. That's my job, as you know, you chair. No, I think you can answer if you want, but you are not obliged to answer. In other words, if you feel it's relevant, fine. But it's not really a question that I feel relevant. Though it's a question we will address with thousands before. Good? Go ahead.
Okay. The second question is, I think you absolutely correctly point to the imperative of economic growth. What, in your view, is the root cause of the lack of investor confidence in South Africa? The third issue is on the revenue side. You made us aware that there would be 13 billion rands of additional revenue raising measures in the next financial year. Do you share Judge Dennis Davis's view or concern about a tax revolt when ordinary taxpayers are faced with additional taxes when at the same time, speaking metaphorically, they're shoved off the road by a 12-person, a 12-car cavalcade? Do you share the Judge Davis's concern about a tax revolt? Then on the question of the National Treasury, do you believe that the institutional independence of the National Treasury is under threat? And if you do, who is threatening the institutional independence of the National Treasury? And then finally, Minister, I certainly welcome your announcement in the medium-term budget policy statement that at the end of October, National Treasury will make available the performance and expenditure reviews. The Minister will be aware that we have been in correspondence about this earlier this year, and I withdrew my PIA application on this matter in the anticipation that National Treasury would make the performance and expenditure reviews, the reports themselves, available. If you use the term the reports will be, the results will be published. Is it your intention to publish the reports themselves or summaries of the reports? Thank you.
Just so we understand, Cecilia, there are three chairpersons here. The other two chairs are welcome to override the main chair today. We discussed it. So, in fact, it was this chair that prompted me. That said, what's the relevance of this? But fine. Who's next? Number four.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be relevant. Mr. Gordhan, we absolutely share your view that in order to get this economy going, we need to build consensus. We need to operate as Team South Africa. And so please accept that from our point of view, we really do believe that that's very important. That doesn't mean to say that we obviously going to agree on every aspect, but we really do need to operate as a team. Minister, in terms of the state-owned enterprises, you no doubt have seen my infrequent comments about a certain airline. On page 55, you talk about the guarantee of 14.3 billion now going to 19 billion, and the fact that without it would be insolvent. Minister, there was a SAA Treasury memo, which indicated as early as 23rd August that the 4.7 billion was insufficient to give the airline the capacity to continue trading even until the end of the financial year, let alone for a further 12 months. Were you aware of that situation? What do you anticipate, if it's true, are we going to have to then provide further guarantee for SAA? Mr. Chairman, let me just leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Minister, you indicated that to stabilize debt, we need to narrow the budget deficit. My question is, how will this affect service delivery and social protection? That's it. Sorry. You say that to stabilize debt. Sorry, Minister. You say to stabilize debt, we need to shorten the, close the budget deficit gap. My question is, how will service delivery be affected as well as social protection in the light of your announcing that grants will increase by a measly 10 rand a month, as from October 2016. My second question is, you hinted that taxes might increase, but in your review in yesterday that household consumption growth expenditures projected to increase to 2.3% by 2019. In the same document on page 23, you indicated that household growth is slowing. So would the increase in tax not affect the household consumption? And then lastly, Minister, you indicated, well, in the document, it's indicated that unemployment is increasing. It increased from 25% to 26.6%. And as at June 2016, 112,000 jobs were lost. What is the forecast for unemployment in the next year? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, for this opportunity. Thank you very much, Minister, for a wonderful budget speech yesterday. You actually allayed my fears. And I think it's not only me, it's a lot of people. But what actually struck me yesterday is your call for... What actually impressed me yesterday is your call for working together. Because, yes, it takes two to tango. I believe that government is doing everything in its power to build confidence. But I also think that ourselves as members of parliament should assist in that confidence building by doing effective oversight to make sure that all departments of government are doing what they are supposed to do and to stop negative rhetoric, because I think that the world is listening to parliamentarians more than any other person. Thank you. My name is Sheila Shobetitole.
Thank you, Chair. My name is A.M. Sheikh Imam. Minister, allow me to thank you for that confidence-boosting medium-term budget policy statement that you released yesterday. Some of my questions seem to have been answered, but I know we're talking about creating about 6 million jobs by 2019. Short-term, medium-term jobs through the expanded public works, but I think my colleague just alluded earlier on that we lost 112,000 in the last 6 months. So I'd like you to comment and tell us how we do. Especially, you know, I know the manufacturing industry has made some gains, there is some progress, but I don't believe enough, Minister, has been done to try and create jobs in the country. And added to that is the fact that we have many, hundreds of thousands of graduates coming out every year and are unemployed, so it's creating a problem. The other thing is, could you perhaps tell us, the political instability, what impact is that having on the situation in the country in terms of our economic growth? In terms of the state-owned entities, I'd like to know what is stopping us, You know, you find any business, any organization that's got a problem, you get people going out there, management, with a curator, whatever it is, and putting it out. What is stopping us from entertaining or doing this and bringing organizations or state-owned entities like South African Airways to profit making again and to function? Because all the other airlines in South Africa are making a lot of money. So that's the other thing. Finally, to the chair, it is estimated that, and I think your chief procurement officer mentioned that the other day, about 40% of the 600 billion rand spent on goods and services is being lost in this country as a result of overpricing, not getting value for money. He's talking about 40%, which is over 200 billion rand a year, in my understanding of what he said. Is this the correct situation, and what are we going to do, and what is going to hamper you from ensuring that we implement that so we can save that amount of money? And added to that, all those that may have over a period of time thinking the state is a cash cow and that have eaten all these monies or stolen it from us in simple terms, will there be some action against these people now that we will know a road costs 10,000 rand a kilometer but people have been charging us 500,000 rand a kilometer? Just an example. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, it's important that you read the MTBBS together with the budget review. Budget review is a very important document. The two go together. Secondly, Minister, the coordination regarding the 9-point plan. Maybe it's difficult for you now, but that court to get progress. That's why the 9-point plan was developed. I'm just giving him a lecture. Thirdly, on manufacturing, Honourable Minister, and the DG. We can also look at the country, a developing country like Mexico, when it comes to manufacturing and regional integration. They've got the huge advantage they next to the United States, exporting their cars, etc. Biggest Volkswagen factory outside Germany is now going to be located in Mexico. And Ford is moving as well to Mexico. I think there's a few lessons that we can learn. Lastly, the whole issue of regional integration on our continent. Because this paragraph comes up every year in the presentation. Are we moving? Are we going forward? What hiccups are there that we can't advance quick enough? Lastly, Chair, and I did it in February as well, sorry. We deal very closely with provinces and provincial treasuries, etc., and their fiscal position. We can report, and our report will be tabled in the NCP on its way to the Minister's table as well, that there's progress regarding the provinces. Just a concern about the unauthorized expenditure and wasteful expenditure, but from our side in the NCP, we keep our finger on it. Lastly, a proposal, Chair. Looking at what the Minister said, what are we doing as Parliament? That the committees on finance, appropriations, trade and industry, economic development, as a cluster collective, have an engagement with the respective ministers in, say, a day session regarding cross-cutting issues to go forward, to take it, that we can explore our role in a better way. Thank you.
Look, the trend on growth rate and the projection that the minister, trigger minister, is making has been declining and will continue to decline for a foreseeable future. And the outer 3 years projections are an indication of that. And this does not really inspire any confidence. This does not show a government determined to concretely focus its planning, reprioritize properly on key priorities in order to get to a point where there is and is put in place growth economic growth measures that would put our economy on a new upward trajectory. And this does not also show any government generating some stimulus for investor confidence and so forth and so on. This is precisely because of the environment. And the minister, by using a Setswana metaphor yesterday, was essentially drawing our attention to the environment about the buffalo and the lions. That's the environment which undermines any effort towards realizing a positive economic growth. But then secondly, the consolidated government expenditure does not inspire any confidence and new hope, especially for students, when a marginal expansion on government funding on fee-free education is kept at the rate at which it's been presented. And despite the proposals we have presented from the council and the parties of the council, that seems to have fallen on deaf ears. And once again, Mr. Minister, once again, the students and the youth have been betrayed with these proposed budget allocation for higher education. We had hoped that there would be a new perspective going forward, but we are still wanting.
I'll time myself. Well, I should add that actually the amount I've saved by... Oh, sorry, do you want to take it? You'll come back. Okay, so here we are. I mean, very quickly, Minister, I really think that analogy, or the metaphor you used, the petty one, the lions and the buffalo, referred to, is really evocative. There's multiple meanings to it, but at least one meaning is what you said here and said elsewhere, which is the country as a whole must pull together. And I like what the DA says, Ernest Lisa, saying Team South Africa. You ask for Parliament to play its role in trying to secure a national consensus despite our divisions, right? Then I like what you say. You say what we seek, quote what you said yesterday, and more can be done if we collectively make the right choices, support confidence and investment in our economy, create a predictable and stable policy and political environment, put the national interest. It's up to us, you say. I say totally agree. I really think that we come back to this again and again. As Parliament, are we doing our best to ensure that the decisions that the government comes with, we agree with, right? That we actually implement? I think holding the executive to rigorous and vigorous account is now more than ever necessary. So I fully endorse from the chair what Charlie said. That we should bring the committees together. On the 9-point plan, I was going to ask the same question. Is there no coordination at the top? Because you see, you've got a president with the SOE. You've got a president with the PICC. I have a president or the deputy president to coordinate the 9-point program. I also think we need to look at, because it's so hard to get all the committees concerned together. So hard to get the committees together, right? I know what you say, right? That actually, maybe we need an ad hoc committee. Maybe we need an ad hoc committee that actually meets and discusses progress on the 9-point plan. Okay? Something we need to think about, right? Now, I'm not just thinking. Look how many minutes I've got. Okay, what I also like is measured, balanced fiscal consolidation. Right? Your main point there, I think, is something we need to, in our report, consider. It says to create the conditions for more rapid and growth. I really like this thing about... Either we work together or we do, right? The point you're making. And I think that should be a key point of our report to Parliament. We must consider that the fiscal framework, that we can try to reach out as Parliament to secure across the political parties here and with civil society, business and trade unions where we can, a more coherent approach. And your point that budgets alone don't solve problems. We have to be more proactive is my main point. And there's a lot of arguments I could have said, but we're running out of time. Thank you. Can we hand over to you, Minister?
We share the further now come back to what I want to say. I've asked Soma to look at the labor market issues that colleagues have raised. Contesting contracts like strategic oil reserves, the DG will look at that. I'll help you if you need to do so. The reviews, the DG will also give an initial response, I'll answer that. FAA, the Deputy Minister was quite clear on this issue with yourself recently in terms of our approach, but we'll repeat that for these purposes. Tax increases and impact on growth. We've actually said that in the speech, in the document, and in the explanation. We will come back to it. The DG can address that. Unemployment. Excuse me. A, I'm not mustering for myself. And B, that promise was a long time ago. And cough mixes alone, like fiscal measures, cough mixes alone don't solve the problem, you see? Just like the economic problem. The CPO, DG, one of his colleagues can look at that one. I'll come back to the 9-point coordination. Regional integration, again, is a speciality of Mr. Soma. The DG will cover the provinces. I will add to that. Coordination we will tackle. So perhaps, with your permission, Chairperson, let the officials deal with those issues, and I'll come back and round up.
On the issue of contracts, what we have instituted is a mechanism whereby there is more transparency on most kind of contracts. Now, the example that was used here is different though from the contract that I will be referring to, but I'll get to the point in relation to the specific issue. We're trying to make sure that there is a process that before the time subjects certain things to a review. In other words, procurement of above a certain threshold must get some sign off from the chief procurement office. The idea is to just see, has everything been done in terms of the precedents? Because more often than not, it is not too difficult to see when one or two steps have been missed or something has not happened perfectly in line with the rules. Sometimes it's because there's something untoward, but other times it's just because people are careless or don't know the rules very well. That's a good thing because you prevent things before they happen. On the part where something has already gone wrong, whilst we can get involved, but we're not police. We are not one of the law enforcement agents. In fact, dare I say, if you were to look at the budget review and add the budgets that go to institutions that are supposed to do this, you would realize that it cannot be fair if I sort of speak a little bit bluntly, to ask a group of 1,200 people who are in the main accountants and economists, and of course there are other professionals who are there, to now veer off course and try to do things that don't necessarily fall within the realm of their mind. What we do do is when asked, we assist very diligently, actually, law enforcement agencies where the violation may relate to things that relate to the PFMA or some other rule that where government money is involved. We've got a special audit services unit within the Accountant General's office. One of the things it does is to look when there are indications that something wrong has happened, undertake a foreign audit or something like that, and then pass that to the other part of the system. And you can never stop any of these things if the other part of the system don't play their part. I'm not saying they are not, but it's essentially when law is broken, we don't have cells as it says earlier. So we can't go to that extent. So, but we are always very, the minister says we have vault. But as I say, we've got a part to play, and we play it quite enthusiastically. I think it would encourage us a lot if things were to proceed to the points of conviction, where people have actually, or acquittal, if we happen to be backing at the wrong tree. It doesn't happen very often. The performance reviews, it is the reviews which will be published. The qualification on this, which perhaps I should use this time to make, which we indicate here, in some instances, to do these things, you get an expert from outside, you know, because they take a lot of time. So not everything that you will find in them represents views of government, but it is an assessment of the program, which is quite objective by and large, signals that what works, signals that what doesn't work. In the book, we do give a taste of what will come out of it. The impact of the cuts and taxes on growth, both in the book I think it was the Honorable Swartz who read the paragraph. It stands to reason that when you tax households, they get less. If it's households, for an example, with less disposable income, when you put up VAT, then prices increase. People can afford less. So there is no question that these things would have that effect. The point. The central point that we make is that notwithstanding those likely risks of the impact on growth, there can be an even much more painful risk, let's put it that way, if we were to fail to act to achieve fiscal consolidation, because a lot of what would arise out of that would have a much more negative consequence. So that's the idea of what is said here, and the minister captured it much more eloquently. And I'm not saying it because there's a bonus. I mean, teachers don't get bonus. It's very much known. I mean, even my contract is there, so there's nothing to really. so that's the point we are making there. The question about 40% being wasted. This was an example. I don't have a specific recollection of how Mr. Brown said this, but let me say it my own way. In essence, there are instances we know of where government has been made to pay more. The instance of the stadiums for the 2010, right? It's there. We know it. The example of textbooks where for about a third of the price we now get the same quantity. In that case, by the way, the percentage is higher than 40. The example of ARVs. So, but then as someone who tried to study statistics and go too far with it, you don't then take the few observations and overgeneralize them. The trend is there. We know that there is inefficiency in the system. There are people who overcharge. And therefore there is reason to try and tighten and make sure that we can squeeze as much as possible. But I would hesitate to put the number, because then the risk with putting the number is that people look at the amount of petrol bed and then they say 40% of 500 billion is this number. Go find the 200 billion. You will not find it, or you may not find it. That's not reason not to try very hard to make the savings, the observations. I think of or the provinces. The minister did commend them yesterday. There are a number of things that provinces have got right. They've done very, very well. There are also things, though, that they have got to improve, and the minister covered them in his speech. One of them, which is not exclusively a problem of provinces, is the issue of delayed payment, invoices in drawers, metaphorically speaking. So you find accruals, and I must emphasize, not only provinces, even national government has got that problem. We're monitoring it a lot of the time. It can interfere with your financial management and budgeting when people have received services or goods, but they don't pay within the prescribed time. They are grappling with things such as those provinces too. And just the issue of improving services, because it's one thing to tick and say, 10 things are supposed to happen before you spend, and you tick next to all of them. Because the spending, in terms of the rules, is not an end in itself. You spend money so that you have an impact. So the sooner we get the first one right, so that we can engage in a conversation about what is the impact of the spending, because that's what we've got to answer as a country. That's what changes people's lives. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Manalo Ratoma, unfortunately responsible for the broad projections that you see in the document. And I'll touch on the unemployment question and also regional integration as requested. Pardon? Of course. The projections as carried through in the MTPS reflect the state of the economy and the fact that both business confidence is in the state that it is, and also consumer confidence. And if those, of course, do not materialize or do not improve, they do not create a good environment through which business can invest. And I'm starting with business because business in large accounts for about 80% of our investment in the economy. It depends a lot on consumption trends, because consumption are the ones that determine with a lead how business would see the outlook for profitability. So those two are quite interchangeable. Unfortunately, we're finding ourselves in a state where both the two indicators are signaling the type of outlook as reflected in the numbers. But the minister has correctly pointed out that there are green shoots that are starting to emerge. And I will try and give some color in this form, that when we observe the sector performance, be it mining, agriculture, manufacturing, retail, over the last few years, we have seen a persistent contraction or decline in the primary sector, and to some degree in manufacturing. There are some signals that decline is abating somewhat. And how this is important, of course, is that some of the headline numbers that we have seen, be it 1 or 2% has been driven largely by the services sector, where retail, finance, telecommunications are in aggregate potentially growing at about 2% plus. So if there has been a drag in the primary, or if the overall numbers as projected were closer to zero, and the sectors that were growing in the 2% region, then it must mean that the other sectors that are providing a drag that is to the magnitude of 2% to get to zero. So all you need, in fact, is some stability in mining, agriculture, and manufacturing, and suddenly a number, growth number like 2% start looking quite attainable. So this is important in thinking about the contraction that we've observed over many years in mining and agriculture. If that abates, or if that eases, then I think we could easily see ourselves lifting off 2%. Of course, that is still further out from our ambitions of 5% plus. How the 5% plus really matters, which relates to the question on employment. It is at the growth level that begins to generate employment creation. So if the framework carries still into the outer year 2% growth, then we are talking about a rate that which is still consistent with job destruction. So directly with regards to what our projections of our unemployment is over the medium term, if unemployment is currently 26.6%, and we're projecting 2% growth in 2018, then we're most likely going to have unemployment of 26.6% in 2018. So in other words, we need to resolve that which is constrained to growth in the system, as highlighted by the Minister, issues in mining, issues that are constraining agriculture, in tourism, and until we do such, then employment will be really very hard to come by. On the regional integration, a subject that I'm always excited about, because I think it carries potential and opportunity. And in the numbers, you'll hear mentions about Africa doing only 11% of its trade internally. Estimates are that trade in the continent is about $4 trillion. So if we're only doing 11% of $4 trillion with ourselves, it means about $3.5 trillion is leaking to the rest of the world. So the rest of the world is benefiting from activity that is within the continent. So we have not moved with speed with regard to thinking about an Africa integration strategy, but at least recently there has been some momentum that is coming through from DECO and the Department of Trade and Industry that seeks to advance this. We are party to the discussion. And where it's coming out of the EU, of course, of thinking about Africa as one trade bloc, having a free trade agreement for the continent, also I think contributes to how we can arrest the leakage to some parts of the world. So many of these things, in essence, on the macro outlook and also on the regional integration, what it just signals is that many of these things, in fact, by our own decisions, we can resolve. So it's all within our own hands that we can start generating activity, we can start generating growth.
Let me cover some of that, the rest of the material in Jeopardy. Honourable members.
Yeah, I'd say that you have to say to everybody, I'm coming back. Everybody could come and say they want to call out. You did your job, but so.
Except if I have to go and get some coffee still. Mr. Lees and I will sort that problem out. Honorable Tobias's point about growth has been addressed. She makes a very good point, Chairperson, about the culture change in expenditure. And here again, Parliament can play a much more assertive role, I believe. As well, and hold officials to account on this matter. We don't have yet There's been a shift, as the book shows, from 2013, when the cost containment measures were put in place. But if you look at the earlier question around the 40% and so on, you can see that there's room. There's lots of room to cut fat, to do things more smartly, to do things more efficiently, and make sure that the resources are spent in the right kind of way. On the point around fiscal consolidation and impact on growth that Honorable Swart raised, it's something we've covered in my remarks and the DG's remarks in the speech and in the book, but let me summarize. And the summary is that the green shoots are there, there's hope to do better, but right now growth is 0.5%. And so we have to walk the delicate path of ensuring that neither excessive fiscal consolidation — it's interesting, the IMF itself will warn us against that, some of the ratings agencies will warn us against that — and the potential tax increases can both have a negative effect. But that's something that we've got to take as a calculated risk and move forward. Be agile and watchful as we go forward, and make the necessary changes. Just before I forget, Honorable Tobias's point around taxes — we don't talk about taxes now. Just to repeat the point that the chairperson made earlier on, and the committee must debate the Davis panel's various proposals and so on, and we can then take it from there. On the ratings downgrade having a greater impact, I think what we're trying to bring to the public's knowledge and your knowledge is the consequences of all of these possibilities in an open and transparent way, so that we're not spinning around it. These are the facts. These are the possibilities to do better. These are some consequences if we don't take any action. And the slide that you had before you reinforces that as well. On the Eskom and nuclear matter, there is no final decision about the entire value chain that this process has to go through. It's still under consideration in government. The owner-operator responsibility, because of the fact that they have Cooper in their control, I believe, is something that the Minister of Energy has decided. But only she can give you further clarity. But what we are quite clear on is that there are very distinct phases in this whole process. I think for the purposes of transparency and public confidence, the Energy Department must come here and pass ourselves and say, look, these are 10 steps we've got to take, or these are 5 steps we've got to take. All of us understand what those 5 or 10 steps are. All of us understand what the rules of the game are. All of us understand what the legislative framework is that we have to work with, and indeed the affordability framework as well, which is a matter of concern. There are some answers to some things. Others are still under consideration, and I think when government is ready with the propositions on the entire value chain, if you want to put it that way, we can engage further on these matters. The incident at SARS, I heard whispers about it, to be frank. I have no formal report yet. I believe there's something on the wires this morning, but I haven't had a chance to look at it. I will ask Mr. Moyane for an explanation as soon as I get a chance. If this is true, it's unacceptable behavior. Totally unacceptable behavior. But let's get the facts first, and we will take it from there. The cause of investor confidence in South Africa being low, I think we've got to be careful that we don't go and shoot ourselves in the foot repeatedly. If you look at the G20 meeting about a month and a half ago, the World Bank IMF meetings a few weeks ago, the general global scenario is very poor. We're living in very uncertain, volatile, and approximately gloomy global circumstances. So the low growth trap we speak about in South Africa as a possibility is a global scenario as well. Secondly, there are, and you've heard me say this before, but let me repeat it, the investor confidence issue is a global issue. And that is why you have a glut of funds hanging around the world. Nobody is quite sure where should they put their money, which economy in the world is going to give them the returns that they actually require. And so there's a hesitancy to invest, there's lack of confidence in the global system as a whole. Geopolitical and political factors are at play globally, in as much as there might be. We are minor stakeholders. If you talk, as we did, to talk to a set of visitors that came across from South America to us, they say, you know, you are a peaceful country. You actually have your act together compared to where we're coming from. So it's all relative at the end of the day. Trade is down, trade finance is down. So, Chair, I think it's important that we bring this factual perspective to bear. And then say, in this context, how do you grow this economy and how do you take things forward? But we are also responsible for some things ourselves, so let's not deny that. And I pointed out some of the structural and policy uncertainties that we have, but we've got to also have an element of boldness in terms of making the changes we have to make. So we quoted Mr. David Lipton, the Deputy MD of the IMF, in the speech yesterday about the highly concentrated nature of our economy. It's a well-known, internationally repeated fact. Now, there's some work that's been done on the competition side. There's some so-called antitrust work that has been done by the Competition Commission and the ministers involved there. But part of that national conversation we need to have is how do you restructure this economy, which allows it to grow on the one hand, but creates immense new possibilities for those in the majority that are still on the margin of the economy as well. And what are the practical levers that we have in order to take on some of these challenges? So there are things we can do ourselves to improve confidence, as the DG pointed out in the presentation, and you're aware. The work that we've been doing with the private sector and trade unions, and indeed international investors as well, is part of that. On the tax revolt, all Judge Davis is actually warning us is that government requires credibility amongst the public. Full stop. That as you lose credibility about the way you spend public funds, and that's not tomorrow, it could be 10 years from now. It could be a trend that develops over time. But be aware that taxpayers and citizens are a lot more knowledgeable. They might not have the latest table in one of these books, but their perceptions of us as a collective, not just the ruling party, is not necessarily mistaken in terms of whether we are working in their interest or not. And one of the international phenomena, by the way, that all global elites are beginning to get worried about is, as you know, the trust deficit between elites and citizens. That's now, in 6 months ago, that was something you whispered about in these international forums. Today, you talk about it openly as a key concern that people have. So no, I'm not worried about a tax revolt. I think we have very transparent budget processes. You are very transparent in your approach. Citizens are able to approach you, as are interest groups as well. And the additional taxes will have to be explained to the people who have to pay them. But we have a progressive tax system. It doesn't hurt the lower middle classes and the poor. And that has been an important peg, if you like, that we've put into our fiscal landscape that we need to sustain into the future. The Treasury is like the soccer club treasurer or Parliament's CFO or any other institution. Once you have money in your hand, many people would like to lay their hands on it for one reason or another. So I believe that we are still, as a Treasury, an institution of government that can be relied upon. We, as a government agency, and as government, our decisions are not our own. Our decisions are government decisions. When we announce things on behalf of government. I can't go and make a statement on a fiscal state of affairs without cabinet actually approving it. So, yes, there are all sorts of wishes and whims that we might see around us that we need to be watchful of. And it's very important that history demonstrates, and you say a bit in the speech about that, that institutions, whether of an economic nature or of a human rights nature or any other nature in our constitution, must be constantly strengthened, must retain their integrity, but above all must maintain the legitimacy of the citizens, because that's the key accountability that we have. You addressed the question of the performance review. On SAA, Chairperson, Mr. Lees did get the answer from the Deputy Minister. All we're saying here, and to summarize what the Deputy Minister said then, is that SAA is a state asset. It's in not good shape at the moment. We're frank and open about that. We need to put it on its feet before we consider any other factors. We've assisted it with the additional guarantee of 4.7 billion, but at the last minute the auditors told us that that's what is required in order for a credible audited statement. We've got a new board, and that board has its AGM tomorrow, by the way, to account for all of these financial statements in a public way. And both yourselves and ourselves need to insist that the board pursues the path of the turnaround strategy. It makes sure that the financial stability of SAA is regained sooner rather than later. The point was made earlier that we want no SOC to become a liability on the fiscus itself and add further burdens to the fiscus itself. And the gremlins that we see from time to time in SAA must be cleaned up so that it's recognized that this is a public institution running on public funds, and it must be publicly accountable for the way in which it operates, and it must return to efficiency and profitability as soon as possible, and then we can look at what else we need to do to move in the right direction. I think some of the honorable members' point about taxes slowing things down and service delivery, but on the service delivery point, let me make be very emphatic that as government we are absolutely clear that we have not reached a fiscal point where we need to hurt the poor. We will not hurt the poor, and there's a lot of room, including the 40% in inverted commas, to ensure that the poor are not affected, that the poor are in fact supported, and that's why we're increasing the grants given the food inflation factor as well. And we need to often focus our minds not so much on the fact that less money might be going into a particular infrastructure project, but the efficiency with which that money is actually spent. So should a school be built for 70 million rand when elsewhere it can be built for 40 million rand? No. Should a particular product be paid at 100 million rand if it can be bought for 20 million rand? No. So I think it's those areas of service delivery that all of us should actually agree upon and ensure that that climate, that kind of conduct is actually stopped. World tax increases, Mr. Rasoma addressed that in part, the balance between consumption and production and so on. And again, yes, there's a possibility. You have less disposable income, must make an impact at the end of the day. But let's watch the picture as a whole, as opposed to an individual item, and see how we manage that as we go forward. Honorable Shokas Tore's point is most welcome. And I think the idea and suggestion about your own narratives and rhetoric is something that you need to persuade yourselves of on an inter-party basis. And the effective oversight will certainly, I think, help in that regard. On the Sheikh's, Honorable Sheikh's point, those are 6 million job opportunities that we were talking about, not jobs. But I think Mr. Ratsoma explained that in the macro context, how jobs are created, And if you create the right conditions for growth, you create the right conditions for jobs. But, you know, there's a global concern, chairpersons, as well, about the jobs question. Where will jobs come from in 10 years' time? If you get driverless trucks, driverless cars, artificial intelligence taking over, technology replacing human beings, our grandchildren are going to live in a very different world. And nobody knows, by the way, two things. One, what is the nature of a job in that time? And secondly, what kind of retraining will workers require? Say even from 5 to 10 years from now. And that's a huge concern. I've attended some discussions on this, and there's no clear answers on this question. On politics and economics, if you want the best example, Brexit is a very good example for you. So, yeah, a particular decision is made to have a referendum, betting that it will go in one particular direction, goes in a completely different direction, and its consequences are still to be seen. And the uncertainty that it has created, both in that part of the world, but for trade relations with everybody who trades with that area, is equally known today. SOCs and curators. We've had curators recently placed by the banking regulator in the Reserve Bank in respect of African Bank, which we reported to you yesterday. If it comes to that, well, let's see. But I don't think we are at that point, at this point in time. The 40% has been addressed, Chair. Mexico, Chairperson De Beer, is in a very different space from us. It's next to an economy that's 25% of the global economy, the United States, and is in fact the manufacturing backyard in many ways of the United States as well. But you still make a very important point, and that is talk of regional integration needs to be translated into actual regional integration. There are lots of possibilities. African value chains, global value chains, SACU-related value chains, SADC-related value chains, but translating those concepts, ideas, and strategies into actual day-to-day practice is proving to be a hurdle. But it's something worth getting into the detail of. I would certainly agree with you. On the 9-point plan coordination, let us not misunderstand each other. There is an economic cluster within cabinet. There is that coordination. Coordination is not what we're talking about. It's urgent implementation by officials and guided by their politicians and a greater sense of urgency in terms of getting some of these things going. I want to reiterate the DG's point around provinces. They've done extremely well, particularly on the headcount issue. They need to be really congratulated. They've taken the major burden of reducing or controlling headcount in this particular matter. The Honourable Matthias's point about the growth part not encouraging confidence. Well, our job is to tell you where we are today, and if we extrapolate from today without a significant intervention, what we could look like. And that's all we're doing. That is not a path that is engraved in concrete or granite. That can change. And that's the essential message, I think, of the medium-term budget policy statement. Let's work together to change that path and create a better environment, and I'm sure he agrees with that as well. In terms of reprioritizing, Chair, I think you've had a number of presentations to all of your committees on how, since 2012, we've been seriously reprioritizing. Seriously, it's on all the budget reviews, as Honourable De Beer was saying. If there are other areas that you think we should look at, please bring it to our attention, and we will certainly entertain new thoughts and suggestions on that front. And stimulus is a fair point. And in one of those graphs where we show the rate at which there are nominal increases in expenditure, which shows the expenditure on debt being the highest, post-school education being the second highest, but economic affairs being the third lowest is not a good picture. So clearly more needs to be done to shift money towards economic support, and there the Honourable Member is absolutely right that we need to do more in that regard. On the question of education expenditure, I beg to differ respectfully. These ears are listening very carefully, as are the ears of other ministers as well. We said so in the speech yesterday. You can imagine within, 6 weeks at the beginning of this year, after taking office, we had to find 16 billion rand for post-school education. We found it, and that's by reprioritizing and making sure that the right shifts took place. Another 17 is in the books at the moment. And we are constantly engaging, as I pointed out yesterday, with all sorts of technical proposals. We haven't by any means reached the end of this road. There's a lot of work to do, and I'm sure that those who are in need in post-school education terms will have their needs met by this government. And then finally, your concluding comments, Jefferson. Thank you for that.
I had a reason why I wanted to do a follow-up to Mr. Haladomo before the minister came in. I had a reason, but I will not. First, let me reiterate in no uncertain terms. I'm not compassionate about fiscal drag, but I'll not make the point to unmeasurable circumstances. The point I was raising here is that, and here I'm trying to play safe so that when we come back, the minister doesn't explain himself from frivolous questions about, yeah, you said the economy will grow at this percentage rate and it did not. That's why I had a conservative view that 2% to me sounds more ambitious. And it's for those reasons that the minister himself clarified, because we're taking into account the fact that consumption rate has decreased. There's capital inflows from countries like America, for instance. Savings are not there in the economy, blah, blah, blah. So it was on the basis of that. But if it's a stance that has been taken by national treasurers that indeed we're moving towards 2% and accept it. So it was on those basis. So I was not pulling it to an extent that I thought that we will have a rider that will say 2% based on global economic output that is be taken into consideration.
Thank you. on this matter has now not been answered for 271 working days. And my parliamentary question on the same matter is now overdue by 20 days. It's taking 30 days to apply. I wonder if this is something that you would give your attention to.
Any other questions before we leave? We're about to end now. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Let me also commend the National Treasury and the Minister and the National Treasury team for the progressive MTDPS for 2016. My question is, Honourable Minister, whilst unemployment remains a major concern for us, government has proposed to extend the employment tax incentive and the learnership allowance, and will continue to monitor the impact of these incentives. Could the minister indicate the success levels of the program and the response of the private sector to the program? But also on page 28 of the MTBPS, government is considering the introduction of a financing facility for social infrastructure. It will fund large infrastructure projects such as hospitals that require national budget allocation. Could the Honourable Minister share with us on how this will ideally work? But also, my last question will be, in the restatement, the Honourable Minister states that much of the increase in public debt stemmed from a list of activities like unwillingness or inability by national government to control expenditure, hidden deficits, and uncontrolled borrowing in the lower tiers of government, and unanticipated bailouts of private sector financial institutions. Now my question is, Honourable Minister, what is it that the National Treasury is doing to address this, or how can parliamentarians assist the National Treasury in this regard?
Right. One is, I think it's very good, Minister, that you went to receive the petition yesterday. Never mind I didn't let you speak. On all your trips that you went there, many extremely trips as well. I think it's great. Right? Secondly, I just think that it's great that the fiscal consolidation is not at the expense of the core social and economic priorities. That's really, really important to us. The third is, I like that you say inclusive growth and inclusive transformation. I think it's a wonderful term, inclusive transformation. Right? You spell it out at some stage. And finally, I really think it's good, this notion of building on hope and resilience. Never mind the circumstances. They're extremely challenging, but we don't have to just work. And we can, through agency, through action, improve the circumstances that we ourselves confront. Never mind that 15 like that. What she says, you know, it's more familiar. Wonderful term. Global growth, what is weak and fragile, is too low for too long, benefiting too few. Wonderful, right? We've got those points, but we can, as you say, and you've been saying it repeatedly, as has been your predecessor, Nene, Minister Nene, we can do far more, notwithstanding that, and that's a challenge for Parliament too.
statement must be read as an academic exercise. It's not an exercise based on probabilities or proven data or anything like that. If we survey the world around us, if we survey the situation around us, if we're talking about, as the Honorable Kosa does, about uncontrolled expenditure and bailout, it's not a reference to us. These are problems other governments have had. And if you survey the global situation, these are possible risks. It's like saying that anybody who's traveled from Cairo to Cape by bicycle, the likelihood is you're going to get 20 punctures. And you might get 5, or you might get 50. We don't know. But you're going to get punctures, so you better have some spare time. That's the bottom line. So I think that the nature of the fiscal risk statement needs to be understood clearly, Chair, and Chair, so that we don't dramatize this, both for the media as well, in a way in which there's a lurking danger. But in the spirit of transparency, it's important that we understand where we're going. And it raises the level of conversation. I'll come back to some of the others.
Just to add on that, I think that, of course, the highest probability scenario is our baseline scenario. It doesn't appear in the risk statement, which appears in the actual book, as Mr. Rasuma has pointed out. That is what we think is most likely to happen, and we plan on that basis. But the risk statement just highlights the fact that we live in a very uncertain world and other scenarios are possible, and we do consider those scenarios actualizing, and we do plan within National Treasury around what would need to be the response if those scenarios did come about. But they are scenarios. Our baseline scenario in the book is what we think will most definitely happen. On the debt service costs, remember that your portfolio of debt, the predominant instrument is a fixed income bond. So you issue a bond and say, I'm going to pay you X rand in interest payments for the life of the bond. So the fact that then interest rates increase or the deficit widens, it takes time for that to translate into a change in your interest payments, because the bulk of your debt, the vast bulk, is issued in the past. So we have 2 trillion of debt issued in the past, but each year we're only borrowing something in the region of 150 billion. So the stock of debt is not increasing that rapidly compared to what we have on the table already, and since most of it is fixed income bonds, even interest rate shocks take time to translate into shocks in debt service costs. We do also, of course, also have inflation-linked bonds, which are on a different basis. But so that's why you wouldn't see an immediate impact from the deficit to the debt service costs. On the facility that the chair of the Appropriations Committee has questioned or raised a query about, on page 28, the financing facility for social infrastructure. This is something that we are working on very closely with the Department of Economic Development and the Minister of Economic Development in the context of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. And that is that, how do we improve our planning and financing for social infrastructure? And there are a number of problems that we're looking at. Firstly, infrastructure spending, in the system of appropriations that we have to appropriate on an annual basis for infrastructure spending. How do we think about a multi-year appropriation? And this is just, I think it's useful to mention this, because something we're thinking about, but it isn't reflected in the document, that could we discuss with Parliament and the Appropriations Committee a different type of instrument, maybe an authority to spend, which is what happens in the US system, where you say Parliament would agree that there's an authority to spend over a number of years. You would still need
8 years for a dam.
For instance, you want to build a dam, you think it's going to cost 10 billion rand over 8 years, and you pass an act in Parliament that says You have an authority to spend 8 billion rand over 10 years. You still need to appropriate the annual amount in the Appropriation Act. But once you pass the authority to spend, the kind of budget process becomes much simpler. And it would enable Parliament also to say things like, if we give this authority to spend, it's tied to certain conditions, such as if there are cost overruns going beyond a certain amount, you would have to come back to Parliament and do a feasibility study or something like this. So this is the line we're thinking of. But we've also identified that within our infrastructure project, the main challenge we have, in our view, is not financing, but it's appraisal. How do we appraise the project? Because in theory, if a project is generating returns that are higher than the cost of government borrowing, you should be prepared to invest in that project. The problem is the way we go about evaluating what the returns are likely to be is very weak. So what we're suggesting is let's establish a facility that enables us to more effectively appraise projects before they are committed to, so that you're sure that it's worth financing. The last point I want to make on this is that often we are asked to invest in projects without properly taking account of the operational spending that will be required in the long term to operate the asset. So you want to build a hospital, but you haven't thought about from where within the health budget are you going to allocate the staff to that hospital. And so this facility, it's really a reform to the budget process that enables us to process those kind of decisions more effectively. And I hope that by the time we come to the budget, we will have more to say on it. And perhaps it's something, maybe together with the Parliamentary Budget Office and the Appropriations Committee, that we can think of about how we think about these appropriations. I think, Minister, I hope I've covered the issues you wanted to.
The ETI, the Employment Tax Incentive, not very easy to measure the impact of this. We know that for 2014-15, roughly over 5-6 billion have been claimed back in incentives. We estimate that, and this is really a very soft estimate. I wouldn't put my money on it, but it's not entirely in the air. It's estimated that about 500,000 people or so would have been helped to access employment. Part of the reason it's difficult is you can never tell whether the people who are claimed for were going to be employed anyway, the so-called dead weight loss. But in a context where you have unemployment as high as the figures that were quoted earlier on, an effort like this is worth trying for some time. What we committed to and we are doing is that we would have thorough study to just understand the what has happened, and make a thorough assessment, see how best to measure this, working with trust and expertise from outside, and that we are doing. It's partly what will determine how we proceed beyond the next 2 years, which is the extension we have sought so far. The issue of the reduction in debt, you dare to do it?
No.
Because it was it's a good aspiration, but when you are still running deficit, the first thing you want to try and achieve is that your additions to your stock of debt must get smaller and smaller. Because for as long as you're still running because you are adding to your stock of debt. That's why the issue of stabilizing debt becomes exceedingly important, and you seem to be on course to sort out that problem. I can't think of any other thing that I have missed. The hidden borrowing thing, the delayed invoices, it is a fact. We have agreed with the relevant units in the Treasury to work with provincial treasuries to start a process where we can really get a better handle. Who is owed, what department? It's not too rampant, but if no spotlight is put on it, it can take us to where we were let me not even say that because it's not. But it's very important not to have it, because it has businesses, as the minister is saying. It's just not the right way to do things, that you have received services, you have received goods, the law says pay within 30 days and you don't pay. In essence, what you're doing when you do that is to make other people give you working capital, or you are depriving them of working capital, and you're making the cost of doing business high, because instead of getting the revenue from what you have sold, you now have to go and borrow money to keep your business alive, yet you have already given services. It's not right. So it's something that we're working to try and get out of the system. It had arisen on the occasion of our staging our annual report. Part of it requires that if I don't pay it, I'm not saying it simply because our department has got a reasonably good record on this. In fact, it has a good record. That doesn't sound nice when I say it. No, it was shown in our own annual report. It's not me saying it, it was the Auditor General. It is the minister who has got the authority to fire me, issue me with a warning, and then ultimately fire me, even if he has got to go by the president. If I don't pay, what doesn't work in our system is the fact that we keep, for instance, getting the question. It is a financial management issue. It is relevant to ask us. But the other committee must ask their department, why are they failing? Because people are paid to do this work. They must do it.
On the cost containment side, we will look at the Honourable Mayor's proposal, but you might want to consider the AGA a better source of an independent audit. Maybe start with 10 things and grow. Exhaustive reporting takes a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort, and you want some independence to be added to that. On the question of downgrade, the approach we've been using, as we said yesterday as well, is do right for the country, everything else will take care of itself. I think we've done the right thing, both in terms of the focus on growth, focus on confidence and investment, and getting the right kind of balance in respect of fiscal consolidation. The ratings agencies are their own bosses. They must decide whether we've done enough or not. On your questions and letter, my humble apologies. But probably the lack of clarity in this area has been holding us back, but I'll go back and look at that. I haven't been in office for 271 working days at this point, but we'll see what we can do. just as a reminder. Then lastly, you never know. It's a risky profession. Well, policy is safer, you see. On the debt reduction point, just to reiterate what my colleagues have been saying, that we are not hooked on debt, but debt is a necessary factor where we find ourselves. I think what we need to prove to ourselves, yourselves and the public, is that there is a plan to start phasing down. We did reach a good point in 2078, 27% of GDP. But remember, debt is not just a 2 trillion number, it's also a percentage of GDP. Right? Your GDP number changes, everything else changes. If your GDP is not 4 trillion but 6 or 7 trillion rand, that percentage automatically changes. And that's why the focus on the growth issue, again, makes a big difference. And I can tell you that the Treasury has some of the best expertise, not just in this country, but in the world, in this regard. And they get complimented all the time, as I indicated yesterday as well. On the point about the BRICS bank, the allocation is already in the budget. We're not selling anything else. And we have no passion to sell Cameroon silver, except the silver that is already rotten, or things that we can do away with. So all I want to assure chairpersons, yourselves, and the public is that the plan we've set out is a workable one, and if we do all the other things right, I'm sure we'll come out of the current period looking much better than we have. And thank you very much for your time and patience. I'm going to leave now, unfortunately.
I've just been made to be excited by Mike. Mike make a very important point, and I want us to engage it on the authority to spend. I will want him to make a presentation, because this is going to be an answer to the challenges we're having on unauthorized expenditure by government departments. You will not sing the same song if we can entertain that. So it's very exciting. Can we have it there? Maybe it will be a Sunday or so, I don't know.
The chairperson of appropriation notes that she will take the lead of a joint committee. You can go. Just to say, look, before I hand over to somebody to the entire thing, look, obviously things are very challenging, right? But I feel the mood in this meeting is unduly big. Yeah. I mean, there's hope, really. I mean, nominally Sundowns, not all is doom and gloom. Secondly, more important than Mamelodi Sundowns, and I must insist on this, Sandy Tobias, my lord, spoke within 3 minutes for the first time in his entire life. That is hope, comrade. Then finally, before Sandy gets worried, we back to normal at the Standing Committee on Finance in our ramshackle, idiosyncratic way. You can take 35 minutes on Tuesday, right? This is a joint meeting, therefore I have to behave. And you have to behave. Thank you. Over to you. Now, just a point that this point is very new and novel. Now, some people will say simply because it comes from the US, it's imperialist, right? I mean, I've gone beyond that.
The U.S. has a revolutionary tradition as well.
Right. So basically, it doesn't matter where it comes from. Don't say it's the U.S., just say one country, right? Let's look at the issue on its merits and adapt it to our own country. But what I was saying is that it belongs more to appropriation. Therefore, it's that committee that will set, we won't take over their role, set the date, and then you confirm with us. We'll put it in our report for what it is. Just go. Consideration for this approach. We'll confer with you actually set the meeting and we'll go to it, right? Good, thank you. Right, over to you from the chair.
Honourable Member, let me thank the co-chair for running this meeting professionally. And I'd like to thank all of you for your full participation on this critical meeting from the National Treasury on the 2016 NCGPN. Indeed, this is a crucial mid-term budget within a very critical economic environment. We really wish to acknowledge the hard work that the National Treasury has put into ensuring our fiscal health remains stable and sustainable. And again, welcome the high level of transparency of the tabled document. I am sure I speak for all of us when I say that we welcome the comprehension of the budget documents, including the fiscal risk statement. You could hear a lot of excitement around this from members. These are the mechanisms that empower Parliament to discuss and shape government's approach to the budget and will be most useful as we finalize our report. Ensuring accelerated and faster growth remains the key concern for honourable members, and we agree that indeed the most significant fiscal risk over the next 3 years is lower than expected economic growth. As paying fast up growth in the economy and eliminating all inefficiencies in public spending. I repeat, inefficiencies in public spending. It is clear that fiscal policy cannot act in isolation. Building consensus and working together has emerged as a dominant theme in our deliberations. It is upon all of us, I repeat, all of us, to work together towards building confidence, encouraging core investment and partnership, applying appropriate consequences for lack of performance, and ensuring budget execution is effective and efficient. In closing, honourable members, it is clear that proactive and collaborative oversight will have to become the core business of Parliament. Collaborative oversight coupled with visible consequent management in budget execution will go some way in building confidence and building credibility. These are the key ingredients for a faster growing and more inclusive economy. And indeed, once more, I would like to congratulate the department for their excellent work in debt management, which has earned them